Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, prisoner advocate and original founder of New Vision Organization, Inc., and host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we are honored once again to have on with us Joe Kay, author of Crime of Impunity, Crime of Punishment. Joe has been working in the areas of social and criminal justice for over 60 years now, and he has been a longtime advocate for the disadvantaged incarcerated population as well as the individuals in the communities. In Joe's book, he talks about the differences and injustices occurring between people of wealth and power versus the less fortunate. Joe will be discussing today what we need to do to become an effective movement. Let's welcome Joe G. Kay. How are you, Joe? Are you on with us?
We certainly am, and how are you, Leona?
I'm doing very well, and we're honored to have you on with us once again.
Well, the honor is mutual.
Thank you. So Joe, the last time you were on, you were talking about the different things that go on in the prisons and in the communities as well. And you were talking about how to become an effective movement. And we'd like to hear more about that, if you can.
Yes, I'd be glad to, but since I'm a better writer than speaker, I've actually set down on paper some of my thoughts, and if you don't mind my reading them, I'd be glad to go ahead with it. So we need to understand that those languishing in dungeons are not only being victimized by their inhumane treatment, not only being victimized by having to do heavier time than in most cases the crime warrants, heavier time than meets the requirements of crime deterrence, which is what they keep claiming that they're all about, heavier time than what is required for what they call rehabilitation. But those behind bars are being victimized because in the great majority of cases, they should not be incarcerated in the first place. And this is so whether or not they actually committed the transgression of which they have been convicted. But the fact is that the vast majority of the incarcerated, and especially those of color, have been set up. I don't mean by this that they were framed, although this has happened, as I'm sure you know, on quite a few occasions. But they've been set up in a number of other ways. The most important way is that those who commit the vast majority of crimes, including murder on a huge scale, which they call war, and robbery on a huge scale, perpetrating every kind of swindle involving billions of dollars, stealing from working people the fruit of their labor, making billions with medicines that don't work or make one sicker, poisoning our air and water, and I could go on forever. And you can find some more illustrations in my book, The Crime of Impunity, The Crime of Punishment. These arch criminals, career criminals, I call them career criminals because their careers require that they commit crimes to get ahead. They never serve a day behind bars. There's another way in which those behind bars have been set up, for they are born and raised into conditions that are not of their making. They didn't create the slums, the lousy schools. They didn't pour drugs into the community. They didn't create racism and discrimination. It is those same rich white men who control society who created those conditions. Poor people have been dealt a lousy hand, but worse still, have been dealt it from the bottom of the deck by card sharks. So, if some resort to street crime, it's most often out of desperation, survival needs, and sooner or later they wind up in cages. Ultimately, crime does not pay for themselves or their families or their communities. But on the other hand, for the rich criminals, crime is very profitable. They become fabulously wealthy, are called the pillars of society, eminently respectable. So those are some of the reasons that those put away in cages have been set up. The criminal justice system is racist, cruel, and barbaric. There are fresh horror stories every day, and Leona, you read them, I'm sure, every single day. Family members beseech the authorities to obtain humane treatment for their loved ones. Sometimes they turn to lawyers or nonprofit organizations. In almost all cases, the efforts are of no avail. We feel for their suffering, and of course they will and should continue to advocate for their loved ones. But we must face the fact that these individual efforts aimed at individual solutions will, in the great majority of cases, fail. So what is needed, what is most needed, is an understanding of the real nature of the problem. We need to understand, for example, it's not a matter of awareness of what is happening by those in charge, which will be remedied by calling it to their attention, nor is it even a matter of their indifference, nor even of their moral rot, although they are indeed morally rotten. From the cop making the arrest to the prosecuting DA or U.S. attorney and even defense counsel, through the judge and jury, when there is a trial, which is rare, through the lowliest prison guards, humorously called correction officers, up to the warden and the politicians over them, all are part of a system which is functioning just as intended. The horrors we experience with the criminal justice system are not accidental, not, as I say, the product of the evil character of particular individuals, although there is evil in abundance, but are the logical and indispensable expression of the system. Why do we say it's a system? Because we see a harmony of all its elements on every level, a harmony that could not be achieved accidentally. The mission of the criminal justice system could not be accomplished if any of its parts did not work in harmony with the others. That is why trying to deal with this or that individual case, this or that aspect of the problem, as so many people do today, is fruitless. All the strands of the effort to protect our incarcerated loved ones and friends must be woven together. Further, our efforts on behalf of the incarcerated must also be directed to protecting those who are destined to become incarcerated. Well, then, what is the mission of the criminal justice system? And by the way, destined to become incarcerated, a baby, black baby born in Washington, D.C., has a 50-50 chance of winding up in prison. 50-50. For the rest of the country, it's 1 in 3. So what is the mission of the criminal justice system, or rather, the criminal injustice system? This is the key question, and without understanding this, we'll never be able to do anything but tinker around the edges, maybe gain a little reform here or there, which can and often is rolled back, sometimes overnight, after years of struggle for just that one little problem. As I've said, to deal effectively with something, one has to understand its nature. The nature of the criminal justice system is embodied in its mission, back to the mission. And its mission is not to protect the lives and property of the people, as is claimed, but solely to protect the lives and property of the rich, the elite, individually and collectively. To protect the elite collectively means protecting the social system. So our criminal justice system is racist, cruel, and barbaric because our social system is racist, cruel, and barbaric. In other words, what is going on behind the wall is a reflection of what is going on outside the wall. Those who rule, those who own the vast majority of the wealth and resources of this country, those who command the labor under this modern system of slavery, we are speaking overwhelmingly of rich white men, benefit from, profit from, gain their security from racist oppression, especially of black people, from the oppression of women, especially working women, and from every form of bigotry, in short, from every social injustice, and especially the injustices of the criminal justice system. And by that I don't mean, as some people claim, that people are incarcerated so that some companies can make money off of them. Mass incarceration is above all about social control. If we are to make real changes in the criminal justice system, we must deal with its roots, must connect the struggle against the criminal justice system with the many ways in which people are being oppressed outside the wall, connected with the housing crisis and the health crisis and the crisis of poverty, with the miseducation of our children, with lousy jobs or no jobs at all, with police brutality and abuse. There's even a connection between mass incarceration, primarily of people of color, and our spreading chaos and misery around the world, again composed primarily of people of color. In other words, we've got to get political. You know, I've come up with a couple of demands which I think everyone should get behind. All the people advocating for this or that particular, around this particular, that particular injustice in the criminal justice system. One of the demands I think we should make is to immediately cut the sentences by half of everybody in prison today. Don't bother going into files and parole boards and all that. Just cut it in half right now. There's no reason that people have to serve 30 and 40 and so on, have to serve as old men and women. They say, here's an example, by the way, of the injustice of these life sentences and so on. A policeman named Roy Oliver, I don't know, Leona, if you're familiar with that situation, but he killed a high school freshman, naturally black, named Jordan Edwards, 15 years old. And he was convicted of murder. And he was sentenced by the judge to 15 years in prison. So if he is served for murder, wanton killing of a young boy, why are people serving life and life without parole and 30 years and 40 years and so on? So that's one demand. The other demand is that the people who are incarcerated should have some voice in their conditions, in their environment. So they should be able to form an organization, a council, which has both oversight and input into what is going on in the prison itself. And by the way, should have full liberty to communicate with the outside world to let us know, bring in some light, shed some light into all the dark and evil recesses of the prisons. And so there are, I think, two kinds of demands that everybody can get behind. But the thing is, all those now, you have sent me links to about 14 or 15 different prisoner advocacy organizations. And they're all doing their own little thing and not getting very far with it. Why aren't they coming together? And why don't they make links, you know, with social justice groups on the outside? And why we should have also a former prisoner and formerly incarcerated organization on the outside, too, that communicates with the prisoners inside. So that's a couple of the demands I'm talking about.
And I think it's excellent. I think it's excellent. And I really do believe there has to be oversight in the prisons, as you say. Now, I started a Facebook page a couple of years ago to end life without parole I did it for first-time offenders. But what I'm seeing happening now is a lot of the members, people that have joined, are putting out petitions on that site, on that page, to go to sign these petitions for their own loved ones to be released from life without parole. And that's where what you're saying is where we need to be. We all need to be looking at one petition that provides or eliminates life without parole across the board. When they start putting the petitions out there for their own loved ones, we're getting a lot of different people putting petitions out there for their own loved ones, and it's going to take away from the main petition that covers the whole country. So I understand what you're saying in these cases. They don't realize it, but what they're doing is they're hurting their loved one just as much as they're hurting the main petition to help all prisoners, to eliminate life without parole completely or life sentences completely.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there's a politician that there's a prisoner that has been denied everything. This is just one of thousands. There's a prisoner who has been denied an opportunity to do the educational correspondence courses. He's not getting the magazines, the sports magazines sent to him. They're depriving him of that. He has a prescription for medical footwear. They've ignored that prescription from the doctor. He had a job. They went over the instructor's head because the instructor liked the prisoner and the prisoner got along good with them. They had a good rapport, and they went over the instructor's head and had him fired. It's like a form of psychological torture. These type of things have to be overseen by, as you say, politicians, the government officials. But what's happening is there was a politician that was called numerous times, and this is a politician that we were referred to because this politician is in the right district. And that politician to this day has not gone in to see what's going on. And the politician got upset because the person that was trying to get the help ended up sending it to all the advocacy groups, sending an email to a lot of the advocates, letting them know that this is not being done. And this is a politician, and ignoring the constituents. This is a problem we have in this country, too, is that the politicians, if they're not going to help oversee, who does go into these prisons to oversee? Who does?
Yes, that's right. That's right. But you know what? You know, petitions are useful, and I support those petitions. But you're not going to make serious change in this country from tapping on a keyboard on Facebook or some other social internet or something. It's hard work. It's getting people together, talking together face to face. It's getting out on the streets. It's getting visibility on the streets. That's the way things have been accomplished in this country from the founding days of this nation. It's mass pressure so today we have, you know, very convenient ways of communicating. But sometimes this convenience then makes us kind of lazy or gives us illusions that we're doing something because we're screaming at the computer. So there has to be some hard work, face-to-face, telephone calls, bringing people together, first on a local scale and then bringing them together regionally and nationally to all come together and deal with the main problem, which is the whole damn system of the criminal justice system is corrupt and it's evil, and it's not because of any accident, but it's all, you know, it's there because, as I say, we have an evil kind of social system which is there to protect, you know. So, you know, I think that the call should come out, you know, perhaps, for example, Leona, you can make contact with a number of active individuals and call for a conference of some kind and have people actually come together and start strategizing and come up with a unified strategy and then have it radiate throughout the country. Otherwise, I don't think anything's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, we had the previous guest that we had was Stephen Bobo. He was a correction officer who ended up in prison himself for drugs, and he came out, and now he's pretty active in trying to recruit people also. He's and J.D. Rutherford and Taylor Conley. These are people that are coming on that really want to do exactly what you're doing, what you're speaking of, is to come together in unity and try to work together on the main issues. And I'm hoping that this takes place. But you're right, Joe, a conference call needs to be done, a national conference call. And when I ran New Vision Organization from 2004 to 2014, we used to hold our teleconference calls nationwide because I had volunteers all over the country. At the time, I was doing national work. And it worked out really good because it brought everybody together, and we were able to talk about the issues that we needed to work with and the progress that was being made. But if anyone wants to contact me, they can go on the website, on the New Vision Organization website I have, or even give me a call at 508-583-0051. And we can start discussing coming together to have a national teleconference call and working on initiating a movement. And I know there are some that have movements out there, but apparently it's not working. And it's probably because everyone's not coming together like you say.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I find strange, actually, is that you can get people aroused around incidents of police brutality, but their attitude toward the incarceration, a mass incarceration, they take the attitude, well, they must have done something wrong. So they don't see that mass incarceration and police brutality are two sides of the same coin. They're both committed to protect the social injustices in this country. The police outside are doing the same thing as the warden inside, as the guards inside, and that is to protect the status quo, a status quo which is racist and terribly unjust. So I commend you, and I certainly, you know, would cooperate with you if you take the initiative to try to bring people together. And of course it needs to take the people who need to be most active and take the initiative of the people most directly impacted by the criminal justice system. And we know that that's people of color.
You know, it's really sad too, because the people in the community, this is a joke really. People in the community see all the injustice being done, seeing people killed, you know, just by others that are in uniform. And they respect these type of people, and these are criminals in uniforms. And so it's okay for them to do the same thing that the offenders are doing, but because they're in uniform, it's acceptable to the public. And this does not make any sense at all. It's really sad. And prisoners are also stereotyped. And this is a sad thing, because prisoners are in there for each individual situation. It's different. There are people in for wrongful convictions. There are serial killers. There are first-time offenders. You know, there are prisoners that are in for self-defense. There are prisoners that are in because of toxic corruption, you know, deception, lies. There are so many reasons. There are many in for mental illnesses, and many in for drug-related or serious addictions resulting in serious crimes. So they have to look at each individual case, and that's what's lacking in this country. There's no oversight of the Department of Corrections across the country. There's no oversight at all. The politicians are reluctant to go in when there's problems with prisoners. And sometimes I look at some of these politicians as I do at the people in the Department of Corrections. They catch them in lies. They don't want to write anything, put anything in writing. They don't want to address it. They ignore it. And I'm not saying all politicians, because there's some good ones out there in certain states, in various states. But there are also some politicians that are no better than the Department of Correction officials around the country that are causing these pain and sorrow and sufferings for prisoners and their families. These prisoners are paying their debt to society. They should not have to be punished beyond punishment.
Yeah. You know, you talked about the word offender, and you had mentioned to me that I might read an excerpt from my book. I don't know if you have time to.
Yes.
So about that word offender. Says a term often used to describe perpetrators of street crime as offenders, and of course, upon completion of their prison terms, they're referred to as ex-offenders. But just who is it that has been offended? Society? Well, to the extent they have offended society, they have equally been offended by society. In fact, society is the main offender, or rather, those who rule society. But what about the criminal's victims? Have they not been offended? Yes. And those victims should direct their indignation principally at those who control this society, those who have the power to greatly reduce street crime by dealing with the conditions that produce street crime. Of course, there's those in power will do no such thing, because street crime is a small price for them to pay to maintain things as they are, a small price for maintaining their privileges. And anyway, it's not they who generally are street crime's victims. Actually, the fat cats find street crime quite useful. It distracts the public from this elite's much more serious crime, helps fan racism, which is indispensable in maintaining elite rule, causes divisions within the oppressed communities, and is used to justify both crackdowns on civil liberties and cutbacks on vital social programs. The ones we should be offended by are those who engage in crimes on a truly grand scale, committed not because they were forced to in order to survive, but out of greed and lust for power, crimes committed by the corporate elite, the venal politicians, and the media moguls. Not only are those criminals not called offenders, they are even hailed as our most upstanding citizens. What is most offensive is that some of the worst crimes against humanity are perfectly legal. Legal crimes that only the elite are in a position to perpetrate. Of course, it's deplorable that street criminals victimize innocent people, including members of their own communities. But the misery of those communities is not caused by street criminals. It's not the street criminals who are responsible for the abysmal health care, the disastrous schools, the jobs that don't exist, and the jobs that exist but do not pay a living wage, the slum housing and exorbitant rents, police brutality and endless harassment. Not surprisingly, many victims of oppression internalize the value system that supports their oppression. Hence, what passes for street wisdom is a saying, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime, thereby conceding that incarceration, the conditions of prison, as well as the length of prison sentences, are entirely justified. But 99.9% of the worst offenders, together with their huge network of co-conspirators, confederates, apologists, all those who serve them in one capacity or another for a slice of the loot or for just a few crumbs, never do the time. Those screaming from the rooftops about street crime in reality couldn't care less about such crime, for, as we have said, if they did care, they would use their power to rid society of those social inequities which are responsible for street crime. That much is easy. What is far more difficult is rooting out the kind of crime which goes hand in hand with positions of power and privilege. And this can only be done through social change, fundamental social change.
Wow. That is powerful.
I admire you so much for your energy and your breadth of vision. And I'm hoping that people do contact you and do not only contact you, but agree to collaborate with you on the very broad mission that you've set out for the movement. And I salute you.
If that happens, I hope you will work with us all the way. I think your insight in 60 years of activism and criminal justice and social justice advocacy work, I think you have an awful lot to offer. And I thank you for that, and I really would like to have you come back on again at some point in time, and we can discuss that at another time. But we are running out of time now, and I just want to say everything that you said in that book makes so much sense, and it's true that the victims of offenders, and the offenders who are called offenders, where the real perpetrators are the corporate, are the ones that are wealthy and powerful.
Yes, indeed.
So I thank you, Joe. And my email address is N as in Nancy, V as in Victor, O as in Oscar, P as in Peter, R as in Rita, E as in Evolve, and S as in Sam at Verizon.net or at gmail.com. If anyone wants to get a teleconference call going and start working on something like this that Joe has mentioned, then let me know, and then we can set it up. I'll contact Joe, and we can hopefully get this teleconference call going, and everyone can talk about how they would like to be involved in an effective
way. Leona, why don't you repeat your email address?
NVOPres@Verizon.net or NVOPres@gmail.com. And I look forward to having you back on, Joe, and we will be in contact. Thank you so much for being on the air with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And I hope the audience enjoyed what they were hearing, because it's going to be very helpful for them as well. So thank you once again, Joe, and we will talk soon.
Okay.